You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business. Acuity downplays its recent breach. Iced ID gives way to a new malware strain. Russia arrests alleged credit card thieves. Wiz uncovers security flaws in Hugging Face AI models. NERC and the EISAC review lessons learned from simulated attacks on the electrical grid. UK police track honey traps targeting MPs. Microsoft says China is actively trying to influence U.S. elections. A major global lens maker suffers a cyber attack. Our guest, Dick O'Brien from the Symantec Threat Hunter team, shares how ransomware operators adapt to disruption. And SEO under threat of legal action. It's Friday, April 5th, 2024. I'm Dave Bittner, and this is your CyberWire Intel Briefing. Happy Friday, everyone. It is great to have you here with us. In a follow-up to the recent cybersecurity incident at Acuity, a tech firm serving U.S. federal agencies, the company has acknowledged the breach but downplayed the sensitivity of the compromised data. Hacker Intel Broker claimed to have disseminated personal data from approximately 3,000 individuals, mainly linked to the U.S. Department of State, along with 2.5 gigabytes of files purportedly from Acuity. Despite assertions of exposing classified communications, Acuity CEO Rui Garcia clarified the breach affected only outdated, non-sensitive GitHub repository information. The company has since implemented security upgrades and, after thorough investigations, reported no impact on sensitive client data. The State Department is conducting its own inquiry into the allegations. Latrodectus, a new malware evolving from the Iced ID loader, has been identified in malicious email campaigns since November 2023. Discovered by Proofpoint and Team Cymru, its capabilities appear experimental. Iced ID, known since 2017 as a banking Trojan, has evolved into a sophisticated loader for various malware types, including ransomware. Recently, with the February 2024 guilty plea of an Iced ID leader, researchers suggest Latrodectus, sharing infrastructure and tactics with Iced ID, may become its successor. Distributed mainly through phishing by threat actors TA-577 and TA-578, Latrodectus initiates attacks via fake copyright infringement notices, leading victims to download a payload designed to evade detection and perform sandbox checks before executing. It can retrieve further malicious payloads from a command and control server, signaling a potential rise in its use for future cyber attacks. In a rare public action against cybercrime within its borders, Russia has charged 6 individuals with stealing details from 160,000 credit cards and online store payments. The suspects employed malware and malicious code to pilfer payment information, later selling it on darknet forums. This operation utilized a Magecart-style attack, injecting code into e-commerce sites to capture sensitive data. The crackdown is notable in a country where cybercriminals often operate with impunity, hinting at possible connections to a broader crackdown, such as the 2022 arrest of the UniCC forum administrator involved in a massive stolen card trade. The suspects face up to 7 years in prison if convicted. Cloud security company Wiz discovered two critical flaws in AI models on Hugging Face, a major AI model sharing platform, posing risks to AI as a service providers. The vulnerabilities include risks of shared inference infrastructure and CI/CD pipeline takeover. These flaws could allow attackers to execute malicious code or perform supply chain attacks by exploiting the pickle format used in serialized AI models or by compromising the automated software development workflow. Wiz's investigation demonstrated potential exploitation methods, such as causing false predictions or remote code execution. Despite limited tools for checking model integrity, Hugging Face offers pickle scanning for verification. Wiz and Hugging Face collaborated to address these issues. A report from NERC and the EISAC look at lessons learned from the GridX 7 exercise, a simulated targeting of North America's electric grid with cyber and physical attacks. The exercise involved a broad spectrum of participants from the electric sector and government, emphasizing the grid's resilience and response strategies. This simulation included distributed play and an executive tabletop session, spotlighting the urgent need for fortified resilience against complex threats, better coordination among electric utilities, government partners, and interconnected sectors, along with the enhancement of hybrid work environment response strategies. Recommendations in the report include calls for improved communication methods, better planning to ensure technical information is accessible across diverse teams, and tailored support for organizations of different sizes and experience levels. Future directions include deeper engagement across sectors, making the exercise more accessible to a wide participant range, and enhancing materials, especially for cyber scenarios, to better prepare for and mitigate evolving cybersecurity threats to the grid. UK police and Parliament's security department are investigating a honey trap scheme targeting Westminster politicians, officials, and journalists, involving suggestive messages on WhatsApp aiming to obtain compromising photos. This follows a Politico report highlighting the message's tailored nature and sexually explicit progressions. While there's no direct evidence linking the scheme to state espionage, concerns about such activities have risen after warnings about China's cyber targeting. The situation came to light after William Ragg, a senior Conservative MP, admitted to sharing colleagues' numbers under pressure from someone he met on Grindr. Investigations were sparked by a report of unsolicited messages to a Leicestershire MP, with impacted individuals urged to report for their protection against potential blackmail. Microsoft has reported that Chinese-affiliated actors are employing fake social media accounts and AI-generated content to potentially influence U.S. elections and sow divisions on contentious domestic issues. According to Microsoft Threat Intelligence, these operations aim to gather intelligence and possibly sway the outcomes of elections in the U.S. and other democracies, with recent activities targeting the Taiwanese elections through AI content. This assertion follows earlier criticisms of Microsoft for mishandling a preventable breach attributed to China-linked hackers, underscoring a complex backdrop of cybersecurity tensions between Western countries and China. The tech giant emphasizes the enhanced sophistication and targets of China's influence operations, despite little evidence of successful opinion manipulation. Japan's Hoya Corporation is actively working to recover systems at some production plants affected by a cyber attack on March 30th. The attack led to the isolation of servers, disrupting IT systems at its headquarters and various divisions. Immediate action was taken upon detecting abnormal system behavior at an overseas office. The company, one of the world's largest manufacturers of optical products, is collaborating with external forensic experts and has informed relevant authorities. The incident has impacted production plants and product ordering systems, but the extent and nature of the breach, including whether confidential information was compromised, are still under investigation. Hoya says they're prioritizing the restoration of affected systems and minimizing customer impact, with the investigation expected to take considerable time. Coming up after the break, Dick O'Brien from the Symantec Threat Hunter team shares how ransomware operators adapt to disruption. Stay with us.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire Daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire. Dick O'Brien is a principal intelligence analyst with Symantec's Threat Hunter team. I recently caught up with him for insights on how ransomware operators adapt to disruption.
I think it has been very apparent, particularly over the last 12 months, about how adaptable ransomware organizations can be to disruption that either directly or indirectly affects their operations. And I think the real signifier of this, or the real thing to look at, has been their distribution channels. So if you maybe look back more than 12 months, maybe go back to 2021, 2022, botnets were very much the favored distribution channel for ransomware operators. And what would happen is that botnets grow themselves by using the botnet to send out these massive spam campaigns that are laced with malware. And any computer, anybody who opens that malware then gets added to the botnet. And what botnet operators were doing then were selling off access to their more interesting victims to ransomware operators. In some cases, the ransomware operators had close ties with the botnets themselves, and in at least one case, we think they owned one. But this was usually the preferred way of getting into organizations. So botnets, they had a large pool of potential victims, and they could sell off the interesting ones to the ransomware groups. So we saw a lot of ransomware attacks beginning with the likes of TrickBot Iced ID and Quackbot, amongst others. And then what happened is for one reason or another, the various big botnets kind of got knocked offline. There was some disruption efforts in law enforcement operations that hit TrickBot. And then more recently, they hit QuackBot in the middle of last year. And if you had told me about this, I guess 12 months ago, I would have said, oh, that would probably be a problem for the ransomware operators, and we'll probably see less attacks. And what happened instead was that after the last of the big botnets went away, QuackBot, ransomware attacks actually increased. They increased by a significant amount in Q3 of 2023. And what happened was that ransomware operators, they found other and probably better infection vectors to get into organizations. And those vectors are the exploit of known vulnerabilities in public-facing applications. I think it probably started with the discovery of a string of vulnerabilities over the space of a year or so in Microsoft Exchange Server. So those things like Proxy Shell, Proxy Not Shell, Proxy Logon, things like that. And they kind of came in quick succession. And I think it probably opens the eyes, the attacker's eyes, to the potential of these vulnerabilities in public-facing applications that are widely used. And they began looking around for more similar types of vulns. And what you are seeing now is that shortly after a vulnerability is patched, you're going to see you'll see a lot of scanning campaigns looking for unpatched servers, and invariably there are some. And then in some cases it may be the ransomware operators can do the scanning. In a lot of cases, it's probably what are known as access brokers, and they're scanning and then selling off interesting victims onto ransomware groups for further exploitation. So they pretty much switched from one infection vector to another. And not only did they keep their business growing, they managed to grow it.
What about when we see, with great fanfare, a takedown by international law enforcement? You know, and there's a big announcement. We see perhaps, you know, some infrastructure go down. Don't typically see arrests because these folks are often out of reach. But it seems to me like not long after that announcement and that takedown, maybe you'll see the group isn't as dead as we had thought or hoped they might be.
I think a takedown is always good news. It's always positive news. Even if it doesn't make your attackers go away completely, it means that they have to work harder to get back to where they are. You know, it's not business as usual anymore. I think you probably have to see law enforcement operations as each one as being a sort of a piece in the jigsaw, and maybe over time they will collectively put a bigger dent in cybercrime than maybe each individual operation may appear to be. But you're right, the lack of arrests, which is because a lot of suspects are in jurisdictions that don't have extradition treaties with countries like the US, does make it a lot more difficult.
Where do you suppose we're headed here? I mean, you make the point that rather than resignation, with takedowns or patches seem to lead to innovation. Is there hope on the horizon that perhaps the defenders can get a hold of this, or is this seem to be here to stay for the foreseeable future?
I think there is hope on the horizon. I think in relation to the current infection vector du jour, I think as awareness grows about these exploit campaigns, organizations are going to be quick to move on it. and being, you know, much more proactive about patching software and identifying unpatched instances and things like that. So, you know, that avenue could be shut off really quickly. And then after that, yeah, they could innovate again, but I think it might be an awful lot harder than this time around, you know. You're cutting off the low-hanging fruit. So I don't think it's good that they're going to continue to, it's going to be, to continue to be so easy for them.
Mm. Well, given where we find ourselves at this moment, what are your current recommendations for organizations to best defend themselves?
Awareness of how they're get of vectors, you know, how they are getting in is obviously key, you know, and if you can stop them at the first step, that's the best possible defense, you know. So awareness of what applications you're running and ensuring that you are updating as and when patches are released. In some cases, we have seen scanning campaigns for recently patched vulnerabilities begin within 24 hours of the patch coming out. So that is, that's your window, you know. You can't afford to be complacent about this. And also, the other, I think, takeaway when it comes to ransomware is the realization that the TTPs they're using involve very, very little malware. We're seeing an explosion in the number of what we call dual-use tools. So they're essentially legit software packages that are installed by the attackers themselves and used to their own ends. In particular, remote desktop, remote admin tools, an awful lot of them are being used, but also these kind of RMM solutions, remote management and monitoring solutions. Some of them are used, ironically, to roll out software updates across an entire network. But ransomware groups have kind of cottoned onto their potential, and they're using it to roll out ransomware across networks. Mm. An awareness of what kind of tool set is now being used, and having oversight and monitoring of what software is being used on your network. And almost you nearly need to have a whitelist of authorized applications. These are the applications we use. And anything else should be treated with suspicion.
That's Dick O'Brien from Symantec's Threat Hunter team. Don't struggle to align your organization's cybersecurity with business risk. Get the only solution that goes beyond reacting to threats with vulnerability and risk monitoring. You need the next evolution of MDR, and only Critical Start delivers it. Critical Start doesn't just monitor and respond to threats. They put you in control by detecting suspicious activities, quickly responding to contain threats, and identifying your most critical assets and protecting them against vulnerabilities and exposures. With continuous visibility, expert guidance, and measurable risk reduction, Critical Start has redefined what it means to manage cyber risk. Demonstrate provable security maturity to your leadership while positioning your program to achieve the greatest risk reduction per dollar spent. Stop fearing risk and start managing it with Critical Start. Visit criticalstart.com and request a demo today. That's criticalstart.com. And finally, Ernie Smith, author and proprietor of the popular website Tedium, recently encountered a sophisticated scam operation disguised as a copyright enforcement action. Smith received a communication from a supposed law firm, Commonwealth Legal, which alleged a copyright infringement related to an image used on his website. The notice, rather than demanding the removal of the image or threatening a lawsuit, instructed Smith to place a visible and clickable link under the disputed photo, directing to a website named Tech for Gods. The message warned of legal action should he fail to comply. Upon closer inspection, Smith discovered numerous red flags pointing to the illegitimacy of Commonwealth Legal. The firm's website featured generic design elements populated with stock images, and the portraits of its lawyers appeared eerily lifeless, typical of faces generated by AI through generative adversarial networks. Further investigations into the firm's listed address revealed it as non-existent, and attempts to reach the firm through provided contact details led nowhere. This peculiar situation unveiled not a genuine copyright enforcement effort, but an elaborate SEO scam. The scam aimed to improve the Google ranking of Tech for Gods, a gadget review website. This incident sheds light on a new, more insidious form of SEO scamming that mimics the structure and threat of legal copyright actions. These scams exploit the fear and formalities associated with legal disputes to coerce website owners into unknowingly participating in manipulative SEO practices. Our legal desk tells us the lawyers at Commonwealth Legal are so advanced, they've already passed the bar exam in the metaverse. Before we go, a quick note of thanks. One of the most gratifying parts of being part of this team is when a kind listener takes the time to let us know how much they value and appreciate our work. We got an anonymous care package in the mail from a listener in Texas who sent along an amazing collection of goodies, snacks, and knickknacks for our N2K Cyberwire and T-Minus podcasting teams, along with a handwritten letter expressing gratitude for the work we do. To our Texas superfan, on behalf of everyone here, thank you for taking the time and effort to reach out and share your kind thoughts. You've got a lot of folks smiling from ear to ear here at the N2K Cyberwire studios, and it's a great way for all of us to head into the weekend. So thanks. Have a great weekend, everybody. And that's the Cyberwire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. Be sure to check out this weekend's Research Saturday and my conversation with Noah Pack, a SANS Internet Storm Center intern. We're discussing what happens when you accidentally leak your AWS API keys. That's Research Saturday. Check it out. We'd love to know what you think of this podcast. You can email us at cyberwire@n2k.com. N2K Strategic Workforce Intelligence optimizes the value of your biggest investment, your people. We make you smarter about your team while making your team smarter. Learn more at n2k.com. This episode was produced by Liz Stokes. Our mixer is Trey Hester, with original music by Elliot Peltzman. Our executive producers are Jennifer Iben and Brandon Karp. Our executive editor is Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here next week. Now a word from our sponsor, Netskope. Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and Zero Trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com.